Chapter 31. Joyful style of house within, but quite the contrary. Sad colored curtains, whose proportions were spare and lean, hid themselves despondently behind the windows. The tables and chairs were put away in rows, like figures in a sum. Fires were so rarely lighted in the rooms of ceremony, that they felt like wells, and a visitor represented the bucket. The dining room seemed the last place in the world where any eating or drinking was likely to occur. There was no sound through all the house, but the ticking of a great clock in the hall, which made itself audible in the very garrets, and sometimes a dull cooing of young gentlemen at their lessons, like the murmurings of an assemblage of melancholy pigeons. Miss Blimmer, too, although a slim and graceful maid, did no soft violence to the gravity of the house. There was no light nonsense about Miss Blimmer. She kept her hair short and crisp, and wore spectacles. She was dry and sandy with working in the graves of deceased languages. None of your live languages for Miss Blimmer. They must be dead stone dead, and then Miss Blimmer dug them up like a ghoul. Mrs. Blimmer, her mama, was not learned herself, but she pretended to be, and that did quite as well. She said at evening parties that if she could have known Cicero, she thought she could have died contented. It was the steady joy of her life to see the doctor's young gentleman go out walking, unlike all other young gentlemen, in the largest possible shirt collars and the stiffest possible cravats. It was so classical, she said. As to Mr. Feeder, B.A., Dr. Blimmer's assistant, he was a kind of human barrel organ, with a little list of tunes at which he was continually working, over and over again, without any variation. He might have been fitted up with a change of barrels, perhaps, in early life, if his destiny had been favorable, but it had not been, and he had only one, with which, in a monotonous round, it was his occupation to bewilder the young ideas of Dr. Blimmer's young gentlemen. The young gentlemen were prematurely full of carking anxieties. They knew no rest from the pursuit of stony-hearted verbs, savage noun substantives, inflexible syntactic passages, and ghosts of exercises that appeared to them in their dreams. Under the forcing system, a young gentleman usually took leave of his spirits in 3 weeks. He had all the cares of the world on his head in 3 months. He conceived bitter sentiments against his parents or guardians in 4. He was an old misanthrope in 5. Envied courteous that blessed refuge in the earth in 6. And at the end of the first 12 months had arrived at the conclusion, from which he never afterwards departed, that all the fancies of the poets, and lessons of the sages, were a mere collection of words and grammar, and had no other meaning in the world. But he went on blowing, in the doctor's hothouse, all the time, and the doctor's glory and reputation were great, when he took his wintry growth home to his relations and friends. Upon the doctor's doorsteps one day, Paul stood with a fluttering heart, and with his small right hand in his father's. His other hand was locked in that of Florence. How tight the tiny pressure of that one, and how loose and cold the other. Mrs. Pipchin hovered behind the victim, with her sable plumage and her hooked beak, like a bird of ill omen. She was out of breath for Mr. Dombey, full of great thoughts, had walked fast, and she croaked hoarsely as she waited for the opening of the door. "Now, Paul," apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, exultingly. "This is the way indeed to be Dombey and Son, and have money. You are almost a man already." Apostrophe, almost, apostrophe returned the child. Even his childish agitation could not master the sly and quaint yet touching look with which he accompanied the reply. It brought a vague expression of dissatisfaction into Mr. Dombey's face, but the door being opened, it was quickly gone. "Dr. Blimmer is at home, I believe?" Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Dombey. The man said yes, and as they passed in, looked at Paul as if he were a little mouse, and the house were a trap. He was a weak-eyed young man, with the first faint streaks or early dawn of a grin on his countenance. It was mere imbecility, But Mrs. Pipchin took it into her head that it was impudence, and made a snap at him directly. How dare you laugh behind the gentleman's back? ' said Mrs. Pipchin. And what do you take me for? ' I ain't a laughing at nobody, and I'm sure I don't take you for nothing, ma'am, returned the young man, in consternation. A pack of idle dogs. ' said Mrs. Pipchin, only fit to be turnspits. Go and tell your master that Mr. Dombey's here, or it'll be worse for you. ' The weak-eyed young man went, very meekly, to discharge himself of this commission, and soon came back, to invite them to the doctor's study. You're laughing again, sir, said Mrs. Pipchin, when it came to her turn, bringing up the rear, to pass him in the hall. I ain't, returned the young man, grievously oppressed. I never see such a thing as this. What is the matter, Mrs. Pipchin? Said Mr. Dombey, looking round. Softly. Pray. Mrs. Pipchin, in her deference, merely muttered at the young man as she passed on, and said, oh, he was a precious fellow. Leaving the young man, who was all meekness and incapacity, affected even to tears by the incident. But Mrs. Pipchin had a way of falling foul of all meek people, and her friend said who could wonder at it, after the Peruvian mines. The doctor was sitting in his portentous study, with a globe at each knee, books all round him, Homer over the door, and Minerva on the mantel shelf. And how do you do, sir? He said to Mr. Dombey, and how is my little friend? Grave as an organ was the doctor's speech. And when he ceased, the great clock in the hall seemed, to Paul at least, to take him up, and to go on saying, how is my little friend? How is my little friend? Over and over and over again. The little friend being something too small to be seen at all from where the doctor sat, over the books on his table, the doctor made several futile attempts to get a view of him round the legs, which Mr. Dombey perceiving, relieved the doctor from his embarrassment by taking Paul up in his arms, and sitting him on another little table, over against the doctor, in the middle of the room. Ha! Said the doctor, leaning back in his chair with his hand in his breast. Now I see my little friend. How do you do, my little friend? The clock in the hall wouldn't subscribe to this alteration in the form of words, but continued to repeat, how is my little friend? How is my little friend? Very well, I thank you, sir, returned Paul, answering the clock quite as much as the doctor. Ha! Said Dr. Blimmer. Shall we make a man of him? Do you hear, Paul? Added Mr. Dombey, Paul being silent. Shall we make a man of him? Repeated the doctor. I had rather be a child, replied Paul. Indeed. Said the doctor. Why? The child sat on the table looking at him, with a curious expression of suppressed emotion in his face, and beating one hand proudly on his knee, as if he had the rising tears beneath it, and crushed them. But his other hand strayed a little way the while, a little farther from him yet until it lighted on the neck of Florence. This is why, it seemed to say, and then the steady look was broken up and gone, the working lip was loosened, and the tears came streaming forth. Mrs. Pipchin, said his father, in a querulous manner, I am really very sorry to see this. Come away from him, do, Miss Dombey, quoth the matron. Never mind, said the doctor, blandly nodding his head, to keep Mrs. Pipchin back. Never mind. We shall substitute new cares and new impressions, Mr. Dombey, very shortly. He would still wish my little friend to acquire apostrophe everything, if you please, doctor, apostrophe returned Mr. Dombey, firmly. Yes, apostrophe said the doctor, who, with his half-shut eyes, and his usual smile, seemed to survey Paul with the sort of interest that might attach to some choice little animal he was going to stuff. Yes, exactly. Ha! We shall impart a great variety of information to our little friend, and bring him quickly forward, I dare say. I dare say. Quite a virgin soil, I believe you said, Mr. Dombey? ... accept some ordinary preparation at home, and from this lady, ... replied Mr. Dombey, introducing Mrs. Pipchin, who instantly communicated a rigidity to her whole muscular system, and snorted defiance beforehand, in case the doctor should disparage her, except so far, Paul has, as yet, applied himself to no studies at all. ... Dr. Blimmer inclined his head, in gentle tolerance of such insignificant poaching as Mrs. Pipchin's, and said he was glad to hear it. It was much more satisfactory, he observed, rubbing his hands, to begin at the foundation. And again he leered at Paul, as if he would have liked to tackle him with the Greek alphabet, on the spot. That circumstance, indeed. Dr. Blimmer, ... pursued Mr. Dombey, glancing at his little son, and the interview I have already had the pleasure of holding with you, renders any further explanation, and consequently, any further intrusion on your valuable time, so unnecessary, that ... now, Miss Dombey, ... said the acid Pipchin. Permit me, ... said the doctor, one moment. Allow me to present Mrs. Blimmer and my daughter, who will be associated with the domestic life of our young pilgrim to Parnassus. Mrs. Blimmer, ... for the lady, who had perhaps been in waiting, opportunely entered, followed by her daughter, that fair sexton in spectacles, Mr. Dombey. My daughter Cornelia, Mr. Dombey. Mr. Dombey, my love, ... pursued the doctor, turning to his wife, is so confiding, as to do you see our little friend? ... Mrs. Blimmer, in an excess of politeness, of which Mr. Dombey was the object, apparently did not, for she was backing against the little friend, and very much endangering his position on the table. But, on this hint, she turned to admire his classical and intellectual lineaments, and turning again to Mr. Dombey, said, with a sigh, that she envied his dear son. Like a bee, sir, ... said Mrs. Blimmer, with uplifted eyes, about to plunge into a garden of the choicest flowers, and sip the sweets for the first time. Virgil, Horace, Ovid, Terence, Plautus, Cicero. What a world of honey have we here. It may appear remarkable, Mr. Dombey, in one who is a wife the wife of such a husband ... hush, hush, ... said Dr. Blimmer. Fie for shame. ... Mr. Dombey will forgive the partiality of a wife, ... said Mrs. Blimmer, with an engaging smile. Mr. Dombey answered not at all. Applying those words, it is to be presumed, to the partiality, and not to the forgiveness. And it may seem remarkable in one who is a mother also, ... resumed Mrs. Blimmer. And such a mother, ... observed Mr. Dombey, bowing with some confused idea of being complimentary to Cornelia. But really, ... pursued Mrs. Blimmer, I think if I could have known Cicero, and been his friend, and talked with him in his retirement at Tusculum, Botiful Tusculum, I could have died contented. ... A learned enthusiasm is so very contagious, that Mr. Dombey half believed this was exactly his case, and even Mrs. Pipchin, who was not, as we have seen, of an accommodating disposition generally, gave utterance to a little sound between a groan and a sigh, as if she would have said, that nobody but Cicero could have proved a lasting consolation under that failure of the Peruvian mines, but that he indeed would have been a very Davy lamp of refuge. Cornelia looked at Mr. Dombey through her spectacles, as if she would have liked to crack a few quotations with him from the authority in question. But this design, if she entertained it, was frustrated by a knock at the room door. Who is that? ? Said the doctor. Oh. Come in, Toots. Come in. Mr. Dominique, sir. ? Toots bowed. Quite a coincidence. ? Said Dr. Blimmer. Here we have the beginning and the end. Alpha and Omega are head boy, Mr. Domini. ? The doctor might have called him their head and shoulders boy, for he was at least that much taller than any of the rest. He blushed very much at finding himself among strangers, and chuckled aloud. In addition to our little portico, Toots, ? Said the doctor, Mr. Domini's son. ? Young Toots blushed again, and finding, from a solemn silence which prevailed, that he was expected to say something, said to Paul, how are you? ? In a voice so deep, and a manner so sheepish, that if a lamb had roared it couldn't have been more surprising. Ask Mr. Feeder, if you please, Toots, ? Said the doctor, to prepare a few introductory volumes for Mr. Domini's son, and to allot him a convenient seat for study. My dear, I believe Mr. Domini has not seen the dormitories. ? If Mr. Domini will walk upstairs, ? said Mrs. Blimmer, I shall be more than proud to show him the dominions of the drowsy god. ? With that, Mrs. Blimmer, who was a lady of great suavity, and a wiry figure, and who wore a cap composed of sky blue materials, pied upstairs with Mr. Domini and Cornelia, Mrs. Pipchin following, and looking out sharp for her enemy the footman. While they were gone, Paul sat upon the table, holding Florence by the hand, and glancing timidly from the doctor round and round the room, while the doctor, leaning back in his chair, with his hand in his breast as usual, held a book from him at arm's length, and read. There was something very awful in this manner of reading. It was such a determined, unimpassioned, inflexible, cold-blooded way of going to work. It left the doctor's countenance exposed to view, and when the doctor smiled suspiciously at his author, or knit his brows, or shook his head and made wry faces at him, as much as to say, don't tell me, sir, I know better, ? It was terrific. Toots, too, had no business to be outside the door, ostentatiously examining the wheels in his watch, and counting his half-crowns. But that didn't last long, for Dr. Blimmer, happening to change the position of his tight plump legs, as if he were going to get up, Toots swiftly vanished, and appeared no more. Mr. Domini and his conductress were soon heard coming downstairs again, talking all the way, and presently they re-entered the doctor's study. I hope, Mr. Domini, ? Said the doctor, laying down his book, that the arrangements meet your approval. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.